Greetings, my fellow Earthlings. Welcome to Raven's Rabbit Hole. I'm your intrepid host, Raven McMinn, and this is my Cosmic Rabbit Hole, a place where we keep an open mind, we question everything, we speak our truth loud and proud, we think outside of the box, we walk on the wild side, down the roads less traveled, and we always, always maintain a healthy sense of humor. If you're interested in extraterrestrials, parallel worlds, other dimensions, star seeds, crystals, lost history, metaphysics, quantum science, paranormal phenomena, or if you're a tinfoil hat designer, then you are in the right place, my friends. But all are welcome here. With one foot firmly grounded in Mother Earth and science and logic, and the other foot out exploring the cosmos for the woost of the woo-woo, each week it is my intention to bring you topics and guests that will expand your awareness and raise your consciousness about this crazy, crazy world that we do live in. It's my sincerest hope that you will find this next hour either educational, inspiring, interesting, empowering, or at the very least, entertaining. Whatever the case may be, I thank you for being here. I'd like to invite you to be part of the show by going to our private Facebook chat room. To do so, go to 12radio.com. On the left-hand side, third one down, you'll see chat. Give that a click, and you'll be taken to another screen that says, ask to join the group. Give that a click. And when you do, my wonderful producer, Jay, is waiting in the wings. He'll see your request, get you approved, and get you right on into the chat room. Just look for my banner that says Raven's Rabbit Hole, and you're free to comment and post under there. We're thinking about changing the Raven's Rabbit Hole to Raven's Raccoon Hole. I'll tell you more about that later. Know that nothing that you post here in the chat room will show up on your timeline. It's all private and top secret. And I want to give a shout out to Jay for producing and all that he does to get us on the air and sounding good. Thank you so much. You are appreciated. And if this is your first time here at the show, and you might be a little nervous about going down into a rabbit hole, I can assure you, don't worry about getting lost, because Jay is also a wizard. He'll be able to find you and bring you back safely to the surface by the end of the show. And I'm going to jump over there to Facebook here real quick. I have a wonderful guest waiting in the wings for you tonight. Back by popular demand, we have Keith Rubeck back again. And I'll bring him on here in just a little bit. Let me give everybody a little shout out here. And okay, Facebook's kind of freaking out here on me. There we go. All right, there is Cindy Beck. Hello, Cindy. She said, got to give her be grateful. Yes, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Are you all busy cooking in the kitchen? We're here to keep you company. I have some good conversation coming up here for you, so don't go anywhere. Okay, and looking here for other comments. I can feel you guys out there. I can't see you yet because my computer's running really slow. There's Renee. Renee, welcome, welcome. How you doing? And there's Terry Campbell. Hello, Terry. Terry's also a 12listen advisor. You can find her over at 12listen. And she says, hi, Raven and Keith, Wizard Day, and 12friends, happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Terry. Wonderful to see you here. Who else do we have here? And there's Nathan from the Quantum Show. Nathan, how are you? Good to see you here tonight. Thank you. Welcome, welcome. And there's Pamela Stowe. Hi, Pamela. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Glad you are here. And yeah, there's a raccoon. And there's Tara. Good to see you, Tara. You made it. Hello, hello. Welcome. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And Pamela sent me a really cool story that I'll bring up here real quick. And in Texas, there's these bottles that are washing up on the shore. And at first, people thought they were like messages in a bottle. Well, no, they're not exactly messages in a bottle. They kind of have their own message. They're called witch bottles. And they believe the currents have stirred them up from somewhere down in the Caribbean. But it was a folk magic remedy for someone who thought that they might be cursed. And so what it consists of is putting either some fingernails or your hair or urine in a bottle and putting, you know, specific herbs and whatever else, and then you cap it and then you bury it. And that is supposed to seal the curse, and the curse will go towards those items and not you. So it'll, I don't really understand the whole logic behind that, if there is logic behind that. But anyway, all of a sudden they're washing up all over around the Gulf of Mexico, around there in Texas. So there's one of the colleges there that is collecting these and doing some research on them. And if you find one, you're encouraged to turn it in. And I'm trying to pull the story up here, and I've got, okay, hold on here. I'll post it in the chat room if you find one. I wouldn't recommend opening it. It'd be kind of gross. But they are kind of cool. So beachcombers beware. And thanks for sending in that story, Pam. That was really cool. Okay, so tonight we have a wonderful, we have a beautiful moon in Aries tonight. It's a waxing moon. Aries moons are a good time to try a new style, to apply for a job, to have your eyes checked, to wear red, or to buy hats, cars, or knives. You keep that for future reference. The moon project is coming up this Monday, November 27th, and Jay's going to be putting a discount code in the chat room there for you. If you'd like to attend, please do. You can register for that at 12academy.com. And we have reduced rates over at 12 Listen till midnight tonight. That's Pacific time, midnight Pacific time. So you still will have some time after the show to go speak to your favorite advisor. So Sun entered Sagittarius today. So happy birthday to all the Sagittarians out there. I'm gonna give a special birthday shout out to my dad. Happy birthday, Dad. Love you. And to my oldest and dearest friend, Anne. Happy birthday to you, Anne. Her birthday's tomorrow on Thanksgiving. And I had an opportunity to record a special birthday song for you. It had just so happened I was out in the yard, and Bigfoot came by. And I asked Bigfoot if he wouldn't mind just coming into the studio real quick and recording a special birthday message for you. And he said, sure. So I'm going to play that special birthday song for you now. Happy birthday from me and from Sasquatch. I saw that in a store. I had to buy that. It just was too funny. I laughed out loud. I know people thought I was crazy, and maybe I am, but anyway, there you go. So without further ado, I would like to bring my guest in here. Keith is a 12 Listen advisor. He's been there for quite a while. You can reach him over there. And he's also just pretty knowledgeable about all kinds of esoteric studies. And I just can't get enough of talking to him, and apparently you can't either. So I'd like to welcome back Keith Ruback. Come on in, Keith.
Oh, I can't believe you went with the Sasquatch bit. Oh my gosh. Hi, Raven. No,
It's corny as hell. I can't help myself. I just can't help myself.
it was great. It was great.
Oh, we talk about Bigfoot a lot
Thanks.
on this show, so hopefully everyone got a good laugh out of that.
Well, thank you for having me back in the rabbit slash raccoon hole,
Yeah,
Raven.
I've got a family of raccoons that have moved in and entrenched themselves between two walls. Now they've got a little den made in their mama and two babies, and I cannot get them out to save my soul. I swear I've tried everything, and yeah, they're not about to move. And then when I finally give up trying to extract them and go upstairs, for the night, why? And then they come out and they've totally trashed my garage. And they got into the file cabinet, even though I had it bungee corded shut. They managed it. Well, they got hands and fingers like we do, so they're dexterous. And so they undid the bungee cord and got in that drawer and ate all the food, every drop of it. And oh God, such a mess. So yeah, it might just have to be, instead of Raven's rabbit hole, it's Raven's raccoon hole.
Hopefully just temporarily.
Hopefully just temporarily, indeed.
I
So how you been?
I've been good, Raven. I've been really good. I've actually had a couple of people reach out to me from last week via 1-2Listen. So I want to express my thank you to you for giving me sharing your platform and allowing me to rant for 45 minutes.
Oh, that's awesome. Great. Good. I'm glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. So I thought maybe tonight you could explain to us the Kabbalah or Kabbalah. Which way is the right way to pronounce that?
Oh, it doesn't. I mean, the fact that that question ha people will have sweaty, heated arguments over, and I mean, literally, how do you spell it? How do you say it? I mean, and they will go to numerological correspondences. They'll go to, I mean, that question. I mean, Kabbalah, a Kabbalah with a K, Kabbalah with a Q, Kabbalah with one L, two L. It doesn't matter. I call it Kabbalah. Maybe I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I just. For the people out there who are going to get hung up on that point, Kabbalah may not be for you.
Cool, fair enough. Yeah, tomato, tomato, one of those things. Yeah,
exactly.
I have been a student off and on, just reading some books about it and so forth, and really soon became quite confused on a few points. And so, for those of you who might be new to this term and don't know what this is would it be fair to say it's a spiritual tradition? That is really, I don't, old. It's really, really, really old. And it's a book of Jewish mysticism. Is that, why
Yeah,
don't
I
you
think
explain
that's
what it is?
basically fair. No, I think that you got it basically right there. I think that most religions have their spiritual counterparts. I think Islam has Sufism, Christianity has mystical Christianity, Judaism has Kabbalah, and Kabbalah would be as old as Judaism itself. I mean, they basically were kind of hand in hand. The Kabbalah did not come after the Torah. The Kabbalah came with the Torah. But it was just a matter of you had to be of a certain age, you had to be a man, you had to be respect like you there was all these levels of that obligations or perceptions within the community that you needed to have fulfilled before you started to learn about it. So Kabbalah is as old as Judaism. It's a there's a joke in Family Guy. It says it's Judaism after dark. So it's yeah it's So yeah,
Gotcha.
it's a lot of fun. It is like you say, it is confusing. But when you dig long enough with it, you will find a wellspring of clarity, and it's worth the dig. And that's I have found that to be really true of it is that it can be a little overwhelming, but then you find the nugget, and you're like, oh my gosh, this was so worth the exploration. And I see that happen with Kabbalah, maybe more than any other field of metaphysics that I study.
What I have got from the different videos and stuff that I've watched on YouTube is that it speaks of two realities, the microcosm and the macrocosm, the God and the universe plus the soul that resides within, and that it talks of it educates you on spiritual energies in the universe. It's kind of a study of that. Is that fair to say, or what would you
Yeah,
add to that?
that's no, not. I mean, well, everything and nothing. And that's the micro macro you're talking about is that I think this the geometric sequence that is associated with Kabbalah, the Tree of Life, the Sephiroth. I think that it is a geometric pattern for molecules and for galaxies. I think it's one of those examples of something that I know it's a little early to go here, but anyone who's familiar with Aleister Crowley, and I realize it spooks people by just bringing up his name, but he's known for his Book of Thoth. He's known for a couple of books, but if you asked him in his final days what work he was most proud of, he would actually say 777 and his Book of Kabbalistic Correspondences. Like he truly believed that everything in the universe, every category of a thing, can be broken down into 10 and 22, and the 10 being the Sephiroth, the 22 being the paths between the orbs. And I mean, he truly believed that everything, all concepts, I mean, political, mineral, fruit, food, animal, everything could be broken down into the category that could neatly fit, projected onto the Sephiroth, the 10 and the 22. So, I mean, there's some so it's some people take it quite literally. I mean, you know, and that's the that's I guess that's why you and I are here, right? To decide where the metaphorical ends and the literal begins, and that's a
I don't.
and I think that's again what makes this a great subject.
I wouldn't disagree with him on that. And I took tarot lessons from Mo Abdelbaki, and we used the Thoth tarot deck that he, the Alistair, probably had created. And in the, one of the upper corners, I can't remember if it's the right or left, it is one of the letters of the Jewish alphabet, and how there. I was listening to a lecture today about this and how Adam used the alphabet to name all of the animals. That was the first job that he had, and that each of those letters describes a specific energy. And so he would look into the soul of the animal and ascertain what that energy was, and then assign it one of those letters. And that's the essence of whatever you're looking at or naming is in those letters. And
So actually, first of all, love Mo. I think he's one of the deepest wellsprings of knowledge in the 1-2 family. I mean, he's brilliant, and his knowledge on this matter likely far exceeds my own. But on the subject of the Hebrew letters, actually, every part of the tree has a correspondence. The 22 lines that connect the orbs correspond to the 22 Hebrew letters, like every one of them, and there is an energy behind each letter. And I don't know. I think I kind of went in with this last week with you on the shin and Jesus and what the meaning of shin was, and you put that in Yahweh, you get Jesus. It's just these cool little mathematical formulas that it's too synchronistic to be coincidental. And one of the prime example that I like to tell people about is the name Jesus. If you take the name Jesus, and okay, I'm going ahead here. There's a form of Hebrew numerology called gematria, and that is yes. The idea of gematria is that your name it turned into the Hebrew letters, and then each Hebrew letter has a different number. You add those numbers up, and anything else in existence that has the same number has an innate connection with that anything else that shares the same number. And so this is kind of I'm saying this a little early, so if you're here early you win, because this is kind of the most exciting some of the more exciting parts of what I'm learning here. And I'd start off with saying that if you take the name Jesus, Jesus, and you broke it down, the name Jesus in Hebrew would come out to an enumeration of 888. Now, I think that's already pretty cool. But when you realize that the word oxygen also breaks down to 888, and you start to learn about the correlation, you know, and I'm not a traditional Orthodox Christian, so I'm not necessarily implying what this might be implying when you hear it, but I do think that the representation of Jesus as Christ or the Christ energy is the 888 formula. It's the oxygen. It's you need it. You need that consciousness. You need that being. And so that's what you would do. Like if anyone's listening and you know, go, there's free apps, there are lots of gematria calculators online. Go figure out what your number is and then bring up a list of other things that have your number and you can see if it resonates with you. The other big example I use is in Revelation. You get the number 666 is very a lot of people is a lot of, are very spooked by it. I you know a lot of literature, a lot of media and movies, and the particular verse Revelation 13:18 that states there's a number and I will there's a name behind the number and I shall reveal it to the wise. The number is 666. Now, without going into a 2-hour special on the Book of Revelation, the man who wrote Revelation was exiled on St. John of Patmos,
Yeah, Patmos.
and he was there because the Romans were like, "You're being a troublemaker, and so we're sending you to jail." I think the Bible is a code book, and what I mean by that is that if you know anything about Jesus' teachings, when he spoke in parables, he was speaking on three levels. There is the and depending on where you were, you'd hear him on one of three ways. There's the literal level, the mental level, and then the spiritual level. All of his parables, the lost coins, the lost sheeps, the all of them, they can be broken down and seen in these three different ways. I think Revelation has a lot of these layers, but on a practical level, so John is exiled by the Romans, and he's talking about the mark of the beast, and who is also the number of a man, and he says it's 666. What he's doing, he needs to get these letters off the island. Now, everything he writes is going to get checked by Roman authorities. So you need to speak in code. Because if you start talking about, you know, what a douchebag the emperor is being, not only are your letters not going to make it out there, you're probably going to get killed. So,
right.
So the point being is that 666, which people have gone crazy over all my life. I mean, I was raised in the Christian church. I know what this number does to people. Now, I don't know how, if you gave me a number and you told me, okay, now back engineer the number, tell me the name. I don't have that talent. I don't think with an app on my iPhone, I have that talent, but the rabbis, they could figure that out. So they get the letter, they get 666, they back engineer it, and they realize the name is Nero Caesar.
Nero, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and again, is it a coincidence? Maybe the Caesar at the time that was killing all the Jews and new Christians and exiling John to Patmos, maybe that's not who he's talking about. But again, it's like, that's a heck of a coincidence.
He was
disregard.
One of the worst. He set Rome on fire because he wanted to build a palace somewhere. He set half of it on fire.
No,
the
context around the beast in Revelation, it actually seems to fit him pretty well. Mm-hmm. Like, not just the number and the name, but just the general. So again, you know, and this is why I like studying this stuff, because it like, oh, okay, so that number isn't like talking about necessarily someone who's coming. It's a reference. So it starts to untangle, I think, some of the damage we get that gets, for maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but the superstition around some of this stuff, actually by going to down the rabbit hole on some of this stuff, you actually come out of it with more clarity. And it's a risk. It's a risk, but
you never know.
Yeah. You never know. You might come out crazier. but you also might come out with a nugget. And so here I'm sharing you my nugget.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I had heard that about Nero. And yeah, if you look into his life, he was terrible. He was like one of the worst. Talk about a maniacal, narcissistic, just crazy person. He himself, I think, was crazy. He was so cruel.
Oh, yeah.
Just brutal. He was,
On that same note, the same way 888 equals oxygen, I think it's interesting that 666 also translates to carbon.
Oh, really?
Right? Isn't this fun?
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Yeah. So
that's my phone. That's a Raven call on my phone. Somebody's texting me. Why are they not listening to the show? They should be listening to the show right now and know that I'm on the air. Why are they texting me? I've had the run of a lot of a teasing because of the 666. My birthday has three sixes in a row. If you shorten, if you take the 1966 off and do 12/26/66, I've got the 666. Wow. And so
hopefully we can eliminate some of that taboo.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully my parents are listening. So I've got a question. The Tree of Life. I got to see the Tree of Life in 3D. Somebody did it as a 3D model, and it was on a show on Gaia TV. And it was fascinating. And how the whole Tree of Life is like a molecular blueprint for life here in this dimension. Mm-hmm. And it also kind of echoes of it being like part of a matrix. How do you feel about, I know you liked the Matrix movie and we've teased you about that, but I mean, as far as this reality actually being that mathematical and being a matrix.
Oh, loved that question. I could not, I clearly planted that question earlier in the show because I could not have asked you to give me a better question. Thank you, Raven.
Oh, wow. Cool.
I love that question because I mean, again, a lot of what I talk is theoretical. And so anyone who's listening, please don't think that I know any of this to be true. It's just a theory I have based on what I've studied and a little bit of what I've experienced. But I actually have a theory that the way Neo looked around and could see all the green code falling and flowing everywhere. I honestly think that if we actually had the elevated vision, we would see Hebrew everywhere. I because I and I do believe that that is kind of the code beyond a lot of this. And I think that the reason the Sephiroth resonates on a level of micro and macro, I think, is because it is sort of it's a bridge. It's a mimic of something out there that's bigger, but simultaneously something that's present and small. And so I absolutely, I mean, I love Alex Gray. I love that is Alex Gray, right? The art guy, the guy who sees all that cool stuff. Anyway, I there's a metaphysical reality undergirding all of this. I mean, I
Yes.
there's a grid, an aether, there's a it's crazy. I mean, I imagine it's like, you know, being on a drug trip
Yeah.
constantly, you know, whatever that is. But I do think that it is structured. I don't think it's chaotic. I think there's a hierarchy of order.
Right.
And I think that the sim the sacred geometry of which the tree of life, the seed of life, the Metatron's cube, the Merc, all that stuff, I think is the kind of the bones of what that reality. And yeah, see, I'm getting off on a tangent here. So yeah, no, it's totally
That's good.
interdimensional, and it's totally but it's also I believe that it's objectively what underlies our reality. And that's a hell of a thing. That's a hell of a presumptuous thing to say, but
No, I agree. I agree. I had Okay, so I had this book on beginner, Kabbalah for beginners, and the first exercise to do in the book was to get either a flower or a leaf outside, from outside, a living thing, and sit there, clear your mind, get in a good alpha brain state, and intricately really look at those petals or the leaf, the veins in the leaf, to study this one thing and give it your full attention. Think about nothing else. Stop, making a grocery list in your mind and all that other stuff. Really focus on this in your hands, and then picture it until you can close your eyes and see every single detail of this. And I tell you what, it sounds so, it's going to sound really goofy to say this, but I mean, that's just that exercise right there, giving that flower my full attention and memorizing it to where I could close my eyes and see it in my mind's eye, opened up so many doors and other perceptions throughout. Well, it's carried with me all along throughout my life. It's I can't find the words to explain it. I mean, or describe it. It was, it sounds like something just so goofy and simple to do, but it did. It opened up all kinds of channels in my head. Does that
I
make
think the
sense?
faculty, I think it makes perfect sense. I think the faculty that you're potentially waking up there, I tell people tell me all the time, they're like, well, I can't visualize. I'm like, have you ever had a dream? Have you ever had a bad dream? While you were asleep, have you ever seen something in your sleep? Because you didn't see that. Your eyes weren't open, they were closed. All those colors, all those feelings, all of that phenomena, all that fear, all that hope, all of that was your eyes were closed. Your inner eye was seeing all of this. Now
Yeah.
we're disconnected from that inner eye in our conscious life because we are too concerned with the two eyes. We ignore the one. But I think as you immerse yourself into exercises like that, and I mean really immerse yourself, not like give it 5 minutes and then blow it off as nonsense, but really try to hone that skill. I think that is paramount in waking up your intuitive faculties. Is because all the
Yeah.
information that's going to come through, at least for me, psychically. It comes through on my, in my through my inner eye. It's not, I don't have these full-blown visions. I'm not, I'm not Raven from, no, different Raven. That's so Raven, not you, Raven. I'm going back to my childhood. That's so Raven. The what's her name? Her name is Raven Simone. That is her name, isn't it? Right. But so the way they would show her like getting these full-blown like tell like you're watching tell and sometimes it is more pronounced than others, but usually it's subtle. And I think whatever muscle you worked out that morning or whenever you did that,
Yeah.
I think you turned it on so successfully that it never went back to sleep. And I
Exactly.
that's
Thank you. That's what
amazing.
I was trying to say. I couldn't say that. It was like I was reliving it all of a sudden there too. It was like, yeah. And it sounds so simple, too simple to be of any consequence, right? you're staring at a flower, you know, or a leaf, whatever. Yeah, but it really did. And so I got through like three exercises in that book, and then the book got lost.
Well, the book served its purpose, I imagine.
But at least that one thing was definitely worth the price.
Yeah.
Definitely. Is the Kabbalah one book, or is it several books? That's something that kind of confused me as I was trying to research this.
Actually, that was one of my first real questions. I went to rabbis. I went to both traditional, like, Jewish rabbis in temples. And I also went to the more Madonna Kabbalah people. I literally went to these two different, because they are the same, but they're not the same. You have rabbinical Kabbalah, which is the Kabbalah that you're only going to learn from a temple, and you got to be a certain age, usually, I mean, a male and all that other stuff. And they're going to see their Kabbalah through the framework of Judaism. And that's fine, because I believe it was birthed with them. Then you have Hermetic Kabbalah, which is more what I study, and I think more what most of us study, which is basically we took the idea of the tree and the concepts, and we said, however we can apply it, we will. Mm-hmm. We outside of just one, you know, religiosity's framework version of it. And so if you were to ask a rabbi what Kabbalah is, they would probably say to you, it's the Sefer Yetzirah, it's the Book of Splendor. There are a couple of like canonical books that are worth studying, regardless of if you're a hermetic or a rabbinical practitioner. But they do feel like it's a more contained thing. Not that there isn't outer revelation, but like they would never ask you to go read Dion Fortune's The Mystical Kabbalah, which is for me kind of the modern day magnum opus of Kabbalah. Like if you really want to understand Kabbalah on a practical, spiritual, mystical level. I know that some of those words sound redundant, but in Beyond Fortune's case, it's really not. You'd go pick up the Mystical Kabbalah. But so if you're dealing with the Hermetic stuff, which is what I deal with, it's all Kabbalah. It's Kabbalah up and down everywhere. And yes, I would look at those foundational books as being sort of building blocks, but I don't really see them as necessities, because I think you can get the concepts that they are talking about, which has to do more with the Hebrew letters and the emanations, some of the gematria, some of like the how the world was created. I mean, one of the things that Kabbalah is back in the, I don't know, the early 2000s, when did Madonna start wearing the red string around her wrist?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah, which I think it was,
when was like, yeah, early, yeah, early aughts. Yeah.
Yeah, she got Britney Spears into it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Britney was a whole thing, yeah.
What is the red string for?
It's a sign of trust. There's a specific, I think it's the story of Sarah. I should know this answer. I don't actually, and I don't know if they'll ever hear this, but I don't actually like that group of Kabbalists very much.
How did you?
I really don't. I don't. They actually, and it's actually a completely personal vendetta, by the way. I walked in one day to ask them questions on like why their tree of life was different from this other tree of life. And I was so concerned about this, why the two legs connecting Malkuth to the two outer orbs, why it was different. Just you're just wondering. And when I tell you they laughed at me for trying to understand this, and I'm like, why are you laughing? Like, just answer the damn question. Why the difference? And so I saw what they were doing. I think, was it Rabbi Berg? I forget whoever ran that thing. But I think what they did, that particular group of people, is they took the greater Kabbalah and then tried to shrink it down to, we got it right. We'll teach you the correct version of it. And I'm like, yeah, you lost me. You're sort of turning it into a religion again, and this is supposed to be a search of your soul. It's an introverted search. It's not about going to the rabbi and saying, what does this mean? It's about you sitting there with it, meditating and trying to get clear yourself on what it means. Not okay. Having a clergyman tell you what it means. That's what my, I guess, still slightly rebellious soul says to me.
More of an inward journey of self-discovery, right?
Totally, totally. And if you go outward with it, it should still turn you back inward. And so yeah, I definitely think that the point of Kabbalistic thinking is to raise your consciousness from Malkuth to Kether, from the bottom of the tree to the top of the tree. And you do so, I mean, in you in a in a in a path. You can look at the tree as like a roadmap, that I mean, people have compared the tree to a physical anatomical human. They've compared it to a brain with the left and right hemisphere, which is appropriate because the tree of life has the side of severity and the side of mercy, which is the feminine and the masculine side. And so it's about balance. It's just another way to try to understand concepts that we probably lack the capacity to truly understand.
I remember the book that I had had a specific angel for each one of those 10 Sephiroth.
Yeah, no,
And
I'm sure.
they acted more or less as like a gatekeeper.
Yeah, you're getting into this, you're getting into the some hot stuff right now.
Oh, am I? Okay.
You are because no, I don't care. I mean, it's all out there. It's not none of it's really a secret anymore. But I mean, all of masonry, the OTO, all of most modern secret society fraternities, to some degree, still use the Tree of Life as the diagram for initiation and for progress. Like you're a 0 degree, a 1 degree, like you're somewhere on the tree. And some of the more traditional people would basically say, like, until you're truly ready to move from one orb, from one sephira to another, you can't, you got to stay there, because if you get there in a rush and you're not ready, it can hurt. And I'm not saying it's the angels at the gate that's going to give you the pounding, but yeah, it's you're not necessarily, you're not going to shoot straight to the top. I mean, unless you do. But usually in the West, the Western mind is different from the Eastern mind. The Western mind needs to kind of understand it all before it understands it's meaningless. And as opposed to the Eastern mind that says, you know, we get that it's all nothing and we're going to just try to go straight there. The Western mind, for me, even, I mean, for me, I'm like, no, I want to piece it all together and I want to really know, and then I can let it go, which I know sounds a little redundant, but
No, you're fine.
I
So with these angels, they would just block you from going there, and this would be a whole, like a, I would assume, like a mental or a meditative
So,
exchange.
well, let's get spooky here.
Okay, do. Yes, I love it.
So Solomonic magic, the Goetia, like I can't believe talking about Crowley and the Goetia in the same episode. You're gonna have no listeners after the show. They're all gonna be at
Oh,
church.
you'd be surprised.
But okay, good. But that is a big magical ceremony that where you're basically summoning, quote, demons and then binding them. Now, some people take that literally. I look at that as you're summoning aspects of yourself and then you're bringing them under your control and you're just projecting them. It's kind of the visualization thing. You're making it real, so real that you take it seriously. And again, people are like, well, what if it is? Again, I'm not that debate, another show. But the point of the Goetia ceremony is to summon these beings, these aspects of yourself. And I mean, I have read some books on like neurophysiology that actually try to attribute these demons to like issues in like mental issues, like real problems that we deal with. And this was sort of just, and okay, in Revelation, they talk about the 144,000 elite. And now this is a big number for a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses, a lot of Christian, what is it called? Not zealots, but what are the
They're like
people
the
that
chosen
like,
ones. They're
well, the people that go and they try to convert you, even evangelicals. So I found this incredible piece of information the other day that says that we very likely, I mean, again, you can, people who are listening to this, you can see there are scientific journals on this. We have about 144,000 genes in our body. Now, I'm sitting here going, wait a freaking minute. There's got to be a correlation here. So maybe the 144,000 elect, as
seen through Revelation is a reference to you evolving your genome.
Yeah.
And you waking yourself up on that epigenetic level. And so to full circle this, those demons might not be demons. They might be aspects of yourself that suck and are just crappy. And as long as you're afraid of them, they will control you. So now in the full circle is it an angel that is stopping you at the orb? Maybe. And and that is not meant to be a dismissive maybe. There is a spiritual order. There are spiritual hierarchies. We know this, and this is not, I'm not right. saying it's not, but I'm saying that depending on your disposition, you can approach these subjects from a purely psychological place and still get a lot out of them. You don't need to come at it from this magical place necessarily. Now, if you do come at it from a magical place, I do think you get more from it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's necessary. So if you want to believe it's an angel that's going to keep you safe, fine. If you think it is a higher part of yourself that knows better than to allow you to go there, I think that's possible too. But so I don't mean to be lukewarm with my answer. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. That's great. I would like to know what a golem really is and how you use the Kabbalah to create one.
Again, this is a concept that I think is, you know, some people take it literally and some people take it metaphorically. I mean, I don't need to explain to you what a familiar is.
True.
Right?
Right.
So that's what it is. I mean, the idea is that you are summoning something, you're binding it with with a certain language, you're creating this energy. Now, I don't know if there are like actual physical rock earthen giants. I've seen no evidence for it. I mean, I've only seen it referenced in like The Simpsons and like, you know, stuff like that. So I take that as saying like, how do you create a guardian? I remember being a child. I mean, I was probably 12 years old and I had a book on magic, or maybe 13, probably more fair. And it was basically saying, go get a shoebox, put a sigil on the shoebox. This is the home of your energetic thing you're about to give birth to. And I remember taking my hands and touching my fingers to themselves and making that like that open palmed, but with the fingers touching. And I summoned a ball of energy and I gave it a name and I gave it a shape and I gave it a home in my freaking shoebox. Oh, wow. And I mean, I don't remember anything overtly crazy coming from that, but I do remember doing that. And I don't know if the golem concept is that far removed from the idea of you're just creating this consciousness outside of you to give you, you know, to help you to whatever. I don't know. It's no different than I think from a lot of people do with, you know, quote magic. So I'm sorry I don't have a more historical answer for you with that, but I think.
Is it fair to say that a golem is like the Jewish version of a tulpa?
Okay. So tulpa is that Vedic?
Tibetan.
Tibetan. Okay.
It might have originally been Vedic. I don't know. Or Vedic.
Okay. So you might have me there. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm looking now, and yeah, I would say it's the thought form materialized, and yeah, I think that, and see, but that's the other thing though, is I think that even though I am a practitioner of Kabbalistic ideas and spiritual practices, I think that a lot of magical practices, druidic, shamanic, Celtic, you know, why are there pyramids in Egypt and in South America? Why are they the same geometries? Why are they along the ley lines? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, obviously there's a commonality here. There's a thread that is somehow linking certain ideas between cultures way before we had internet and phones. Mm-hmm. The tulpa, the golem, the familiar. Why wouldn't they all be the same? How silly of us to think that they're not, you know? It's, I mean, if it walks like a duck, you know?
Are there strict rules about after you've created one of these golems, that you have to destroy it within a certain time? Or there was one I was reading last year, and they, I think they call it a golem anyway, that you should only keep it around for like 30 days, or you run the risk of it becoming self-aware.
But it God, will always be attached just like the Simpsons episode. they really did get it right, apparently.
They called it a servitor. That's what it was. They called it a servitor.
Yeah, servitor. Yeah, but that's what they are. Yeah, but I mean, again, I feel like that's not that strange a magical concept. The idea that you create these energetic creatures out of your will. And I mean, I don't know about expiration dates and whatnot. I mean, maybe. I mean, I will agree with you on the concept that you can give consciousness to these things outside of you, or maybe consciousness is not the right word, because consciousness is a special attribute in my mind, but awareness. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know enough about that particular subject to probably give you as much as you probably deserve.
I want to create one to do my dishes.
How about you create one to get rid of the raccoons first?
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Like you're, I feel like you have more immediate concerns on the horizon.
Yes.
A little Dawn dish soap can help you with that, but the raccoons, they might actually need a tulpa or something. But
yeah, that's a better application for that. Definitely. What is the now? How does the Zohar factor into the Kabbalah?
Oh, that's what it is. The Zohar. That's the holy set. Those are the holy books that I meant to talk about earlier, alongside the Sefer Yetzirah. The Zohar is really, I do think they're very special books. And now that you say it, if you're listening out there, anyone, I would love a collection of the Zohar for Christmas or Hanukkah, as might be more appropriate. I am Jewish, so I am accepting Hanukkah gifts as well.
Okay.
But the Zohar is why Madonna wore the red string in Britney. The Zohar is what was sold in all the malls across the country for 15 years. They were trying to sell you. Now, I think those books are special. And specifically, apparently, and I've got to go do some more research here, but like the Big Bang Theory is described in the Zohar.
Yes, and then it's not chaos, that there was an order to it. It wasn't like a big chaotic mess. It was very a calculated explosion, I guess.
Yeah. Something. Yes, I mean, I think I got to go back to Abraham for this, but I think that it was basically believed that like the Torah was received the same time the Zohar was, but the Zohar was received kind of in secret. It was the more mystical, powerful Torah. So yeah, the Zohar is, I don't know as much about it as I definitely should, but it would be considered like, if not the Bible of Kabbalah, very close to it.
There are there is a discrepancy as far as who was the first Kabbalist, Adam or Abraham. Mm-hmm. And this documentary said that Isaac, Moses, and Elijah were also contributed to the Kabbalah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the book of Ezekiel, I believe, talks about the vision and the throne and the chariot and the Merkabah. The Merkabah is intricately connected to the tree of life. And I do believe, I would probably say Abraham was the first true Kabbalist in the classical sense. I also am not positive that Moses back, I know we're going a little at a different timeline there, but I mean, he was an Egyptian prince. I mean, he was second to the Pharaoh. I mean, he knew all the magic of Egypt. And and we can, talk about this another day, but Jesus went to Egypt. He was ordered to go there by Gabriel. Assuming Adam was Adam, I'm sure he had the knowledge, but I don't know if there was, during an Edenic era, not necessarily the literal Garden of Eden, but during an era that I think would be Edenic, there probably wasn't a whole lot of use for that, because Kabbalah is about basically finding our way back home. And back when we were able to talk to God without, so much static, it probably wasn't that necessary. So I look at it as, Jacob's ladder. And the tree of life is like Jacob's ladder, and we're trying to climb back up. And I find it to be a very organized, pleasing way to do so.
The Jewish alphabet is so fascinating. And
the Aleph Bet.
Yeah. And linguists have talked about how mathematical it is, and that it is kind of like the language of structure of this matrix. It's the language for this matrix. And I know how they've taken all of those 22 letters and assigned them to the major arcana of the tarot. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. And how it all fits together. And then you add the numerology or the, you know, gematria to it, and it all works. And the astrology, it's fascinating to me how all that fits together.
I spent the first 20 years of my life, the first 10, 15 years of my spiritual life trying to memorize tarot. And then I studied Kabbalah, and tarot made suddenly all the sense in the world. People should study Kabbalah before they study tarot, because if you can understand the 10 and the 22, each of the Sephira and their characteristics, their specific emanations, and you understand all the aces sit on Kithar, all the tens sit on Malkuth, and then the different, you know, people approach the tarot and they get a book on the tarot and they say, well, I'm going to just memorize the meanings of each card. Well, rather than memorizing the meaning of each card, try to understand the point of the symbols behind each card, and you won't have to just memorize a dictionary of definitions. It will just make sense to you that the Nine of Swords is Yesod. Swords are the mind. So the mind and Yesod, how would that, you know, you learn what the symbols mean, and instead of the definitions, and that's what lets your intuition play with it more and come up with more, in my opinion. And so I definitely believe in learning the system behind the tarot first, to some degree, because, and as you say, it has astrological implications, it has alchemical implications, the Hebrew and all that. So as you learn of those things, and then you see, like, wow, it really kind of just does fit here. That's weird. Like, it fits so nicely. Like, that's really strange. And then I feel like that deepened my tarot understanding on a level that nothing has.
Fascinating. Yeah. I wish I could remember those classes. I could get so much more out of it now that I've studied some Kabbalah and some other studied and oh gosh, I wish I could go back and I would take notes, but Nemo talks so fast I can't even read my writing on notes. But I've wanted a way to I do runes, and I gravitated towards the runes just because of my cultural heritage, and just because there was only 24 to memorize rather than 78.
Well, I'm only giving you 22. Well, I mean, yeah, 78 in total, sure. But I would also say that people who are scared of the tarot, I would tell them, just use the 22.
Oh, okay.
Start with just those. The 56 will give you the details, but the 22 are the will give you the overall picture. So I tell people who are scared of learning the tarot, like, because they say 70 cards, I'm like, just do the 22. And mm-hmm. when you're comfortable with those, add the 56 later. And I'm serious. Like, it's not an ineffective way of approaching it.
That leads me to my last question, was what type of person is right for studying the Kabbalah?
OCD people like myself.
I'm worth it there. Definitely OCD.
People that try to make connections, people who see faces everywhere, people who believe that there is a structure behind things, and we just don't. It's just a great representative, even if Kabbalah isn't real. The 10 and the 22, the way it breaks down, it is just a good way to look at things. It's a pattern of geometry that is just. It just makes sense. So I mean, anyone who finds Judaism fun, or Judaism fun. Okay, maybe that's a strange. If you find Judaism fun, you're weird. But anyone who's attracted to the ideas of the Hebrew letters or tarot, really. I mean, it's if you're gonna walk this path of mysticism, you're going to have to deal with the Kabbalah at some point. I mean, I really think it's almost one of those things that is inevitable. So Yeah, you know, pick up Dronvolo Melchizedek's Flower of Life. Those were literally the books that got me on this path when I was 15, 14. And it's for anyone. It really is. It's for anyone who sees the geometry on Google and goes, I want to know more about that.
Oh, the sacred geometry. I flunked geometry twice in high school, but sacred geometry, I understand.
Same
Go
boat.
figure.
Same boat.
Once I, because I'm like, I'm never going to use this in life. So, I mean, and I don't understand it. And why should I memorize all these angles anyway? And don't even get me started on algebra. Forget that. But I think I could probably understand it now, and apply it to some of these more esoteric topics. But we have talked right down to the end of the show already, and I still have, we could go so many different directions down so many rabbit holes. Oh, you'll have to come back again. I just love talking to you, and I enjoy all of the knowledge that you share with us. Thank you so much.
I'm honored that you'd have me, Raven. Thank you, and I really thank you.
Do you have any specials or anything? I want to give you a few minutes here at the end to talk about anything you've got going on over there at One to Listen or your TikTok or.
I'll be hanging out a lot this week. I'll be on tomorrow. I know y'all are going to be busy eating, but I will also be eating. But I'm also going to be opening up to kind of sharing that energy. I do have my TikTok at Mystic underscore Keith. That is probably my biggest hub of activity. But yeah, my home is with the 1-2 family, and I've really enjoyed reconnecting with a lot of people this week, and it means the world to me that I can share this space with you, and that I can, go there and practice this on a different level, on a practical level. And so yeah, 1-2 listen, Mystic underscore Keith on TikTok. And if you find me on Facebook, send me a friend request. I'm down for more friends.
All right, great. That's wonderful. Yeah, I'll be on there tomorrow too. I'm not doing anything special. I'm staying here in my studio all day, so it'll be fun. I'll give you a shout out. All right, well, I want to thank everyone in the chat room tonight for being here with us. It's been a very special night. Today's the 22nd, 22.
Oh, snap.
Yeah,
Great,
pretty cool,
great
huh?
observation. Love that.
We should have done this on October 22nd. Then we would have had the 10/22.
There'll be other 22s. We'll hit
There'll
them.
be
We'll
other
get there.
22s. Yes. All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Have a wonderful, blessed holiday. Thank you for being here. You've been listening to 12radio.com to Raven's Rabbit Hole, where we are changing the way you listen to a changing world. We'll be live again next week. So come back. Thanks, everybody. Good night. Love you.